And here we go, back on the air. This is the Monday evening show with Vince. We are still 5 minutes away from the hour. I thank you all for participating with this call on BBS Radio. We cannot hear you, but we're glad you're here. As usual, this is a simulcast with a conference call. We have a few people so far on the phone line. It's an easy night tonight. Let's see. Hopefully, many people will join in the next few minutes.
Is the sun still shining there? Is the sun still shining everywhere down there?
Over here, it has been a cloudy day. We had some rain, but it was we had sunny periods in between.
Is it dark?
Sedona is lovely. The sun is shining brightly over all who are here.
All right.
Around the world.
The sun's setting here. It's starting to get dark.
All right.
Then it's dark here.
It's dark where you are, Marilyn?
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
And so the time change is going to happen the day after Halloween?
Probably.
You hear that? I don't know.
Okay.
It used to be earlier, and now it's later.
Exactly. It was all the time just before it, huh?
It used to always be the second week in October.
Mm-hmm. We need some humans from Alaska to get them Northern Lights, man. Those are a trip.
The Northern Lights are seen by lots of different people. Like, I see Northern Lights all the time, like, especially
wow.
in fall, every night in fall.
Sweet.
All right. Welcome to the next one. And welcome to the person who just joined in. Thank you for being here. Please say your name and location.
This is Marilyn from Pennsylvania. Hi.
Hello, Marilyn. Welcome to the call.
Thank you. Hi, everybody.
We've got a double. Are we going for a triple?
Oh, wait.
OCO.
Took a bit to catch on.
OCO means hello in Cherokee.
Oh.
OCO?
OCO. OCO. Means greetings.
OCO.
Good evening. Welcome to the call. Please say your name and location.
It's Carola in Oak in Medicine Hat, Alberta.
Yeah, hi, Carola. Welcome to the call.
Hello.
I was expecting you.
Oh, that's good.
Welcome to the next caller. Thank you for being here. Please say your name and location.
It's Cleo from Connecticut. How are you?
Good evening, Cleo. I'm great. How are you doing?
Great, thank you.
All right.
Yeah, we're just going to go over to Carola's motorhome.
All right. And so we're still 2 minutes away from the hour. I welcome all those people that are joining on BBS Radio. Thank you for joining in. Good evening. Welcome to the call. Please say your name and location.
Anna from Kent, Washington.
Hi, Anna. Good evening and welcome to the call.
Thank you very much.
Thank you so much for being here.
Does he have any workshops for Saturday's set up yet?
Windows. I think
yeah,
we have
a date.
Another Law of One Simple, Made Simple coming up. He was actually showing tonight's email, the announcement.
Good. So I was waiting for the announcement.
Ben on the call. Thank you for being here. Appreciate your name and location.
Hi, it's Sandra from Virginia Beach.
Yeah, hi, Sandra. Welcome back. How are you?
Good, thank you.
Right, thank you for being here. There's another gentleman. Thank you for being here. Appreciate your name and location.
Hi, it's Don in Northern Ohio. Hi, everybody.
Good evening, Don. Thank you for being here.
Thanks.
All right. And another line joined in. Welcome to the call. Please say your name and location.
This is Ariel. I'm in Arizona.
Hey, Ariel. How are you doing?
Doing pretty good. I've been etching glass all day.
All right.
Hey,
thank
girl.
You.
Hey, how you doing, man?
I'm all right. Hanging there, Don.
All right. Does somebody else join in? We welcome you. Please say your name and location.
Hi. Hi, it's Kim in Florida.
Hi, Kim. How are you doing?
Doing good, thanks. How are you?
Just great. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you.
All right. Good evening and welcome to the call. Please say your name and location.
John from Las Vegas.
Hi, John. Good evening. Welcome to the call.
Hi. Uncle Terry from Phoenix.
Uncle Terry, how are you doing?
Very fine, thank you.
All right, thank you so much.
Uncle Terry.
Hi, Uncle Terry.
I just Uncle Terry, I need three of your books, one of each. How much will it cost me to get three of them?
I've had, Wanda's been selling them, so we'll have
to go to the website, Wanda.
Okay.
The website.
Yeah, or send an email to Wynn. Good evening, welcome to the call. Please say your name and location.
Hi, this is Roger in Austin.
Roger, good evening. Welcome to the call.
Thank you.
All right.
The website's Young Living, or?
Intelligent Infinity.
Dr. Friedman at DrFriedmanYoungLiving.com. When's signing the books? They might ask him when he comes on.
Okay.
All right. If you can we get your I'll do it. I'd gladly do it, but give me the opportunity first. Is Wanda?
Yeah, it's Wanda.
Okay, Wanda.
Can we get your new book, Dr. Friedman?
Pardon me?
Can we get your new book, Ascension?
Yes, it's on it's on Dr. Friedman, FRIEDMANN, EssentialOils.com.
Okay.
And there you find the website for my new book.
Okay, thank you.
All right, I had a few more. Go ahead, Dr. Friedman.
When did your new book come out, Dr. Friedman?
All right. It's about the future of our planet and the future of you individuals, all of us, about ascension of our planet, Gaia.
Okay, I'm here.
Hello.
Hi, Morgan in California.
Hello, Morgan.
Hi,
welcome
Morgan.
To the call.
Hi, Morgan.
Hi, darling.
Hi, Morgan.
I'm so glad to be here with you.
Hi, it's Chris in Memphis.
All right.
Is Terry here?
Terry is not here yet.
I'm here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Uncle Terry
is. Uncle Terry's there.
Yeah. Terry.
Terry, how are you feeling tonight?
The book, when?
Can we have that paper?
The Man Who Walked, manwhowalked.com.
I have it in a drawer.
Terry?
Yeah.
How are you feeling tonight?
Oh, a good last day.
You want to? You'd rather not say.
Yeah.
You feel up to doing a talk? You want to do a talk on some of the things that are not in your book?
Well, I'll do a short one, but not a long one. I don't think I'm up to doing a long one, but I'll do a short one.
All callers are muted.
Terry, are you there? Let me see. Oh, wait, here we go. Let me
unmute you. I'm here.
We hear you, Teddy Brown. Thank you for being here.
Okay, Terry Friedman, are you there?
I'm there. I'm here, yes.
Yeah.
Can you hear me?
Well, I hear you. I didn't have a topic for tonight, but you don't think you can go for the hour, huh?
Well, I think of the hour, but I don't necessarily want to talk for an hour. I'll talk
you don't
for
want
part
to talk for
hour.
An hour?
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
I will talk for part of the hour.
Okay. I think we should do that, okay? And if we keep going, maybe your energy will stay up and we'll continue, okay? And if not,
I'll do my best.
If not, I'll read poetry. Okay. Hang on just one second.
You gave your website because the one that wanted to buy three books.
Okay.
Yeah.
We'll talk about that
through
the call. Okay. Okay. Right. And welcome everybody.
Oh, is that a recording, Rick?
Yeah, let's start the recording.
Okay. Here we go.
This conference is being recorded.
This is October 20th, 2014, Sedona, Terry in Sedona, Terry Brown, and Terry Friedman in
Phoenix.
Phoenix, right. I knew there was a big city near her. And we're going to do some, see what comes up, talking to Terry about his book, The Man Who Walked with Jesus. Now, most of you probably know who Terry is, and have heard him on the calls. But for anyone that is not familiar, or if this tape goes out, about 7 years ago, let me see, 2010, when did you finish that book, Terry?
2002.
2002.
Yeah.
And you've been working on it for a few years before that.
Seven years.
7 years. And, you know, like most of the things that we talk about, we don't have to actually believe this. I think that one ends up getting in resonance with things by their vibration, not by believing. And even if something is true and you don't pick up the vibration of it, it's better to not know that it's true and pick up the vibration. In other words, the fact that we have an intelligence that says we're the Elohim, if somebody just said, geez, I better see what they say, I'm going to do everything that they say, or the fact that Terry believes he heard a voice in his head, I guess in his head, or a voice in somewhere, that said it was Jesus, and then told him that he'd like him to write the story of what happened with the disciples, and told him that he was Matthew, the disciple Matthew, and Jesus told Terry that he would help him remember what happened. And Terry then, for the next 7 years, worked on a book called The Man Who Walked with Jesus. And finally, it came out in 2002. He self-published it. And when I met Terry, the books were in his closet. I met Terry not knowing any of this. I met him at an expo in Sedona, and we just ended up sitting at the same table, and we kind of had a rapport, and then he came with his caregiver to a workshop I was giving, and then we stayed in touch with each other, and I still didn't know anything about this book, and a few months later, I went to his house in Phoenix, and this book was on his dining room table, A Man Who Walked with Jesus. And I picked it up, and I started thumbing through it, and I remember thinking, this guy has a really good imagination. He's writing the story of Jesus from the point of view of Matthew, and it was reading really well. And then at a certain point in thumbing through it, the manner in which it was written, the manner in which the words were jumping off the page, the energy of the Christed energy, which I have learned to be sensitive to, was radiating from the book. And I looked up from the book, I looked at Terry, and I said, you were Matthew, weren't you? And he looked back at me and he said, yes. And he never said that in the book. He just wrote the book from the point of view of Matthew. He never said that he was Matthew. And at which point, I didn't necessarily believe it right off the bat. And I remember saying to myself, oh, my God, I got another thing to deal with here. I got to figure out what to do with this because it seemed pretty big. And I had Terry on my Monday, this show, I guess, was it a year ago, Terry, or something like that? I don't know.
Something like that.
And I really didn't introduce him as the reincarnation of Matthew, but I said, he thinks he is. And I still, you know, think that's a good way to leave it, because to say he was Matthew, just to say that publicly, would cause people to either think somebody is exploiting Jesus' name, just like with the reincarnation of Edgar Casey. There's people that came up and said, Wilcox is just as exploiting Casey because he looks like him. Well, this is even worse, because here you have the biggest book, the most popular book in the history of the planet, and a fellow here that says, geez, I wrote the major book in that book, and that he was Jesus' scribe. And I'm honored to have Terry on tonight. And Terry has had somewhat fragile health. And so I haven't booked him to be on because his energy is up and down. But since he showed up, I think it's a good opportunity to talk a little further, if I can think of some topics here that we haven't talked about. And, you know, in these ongoing calls, there's been, aside from Terry, there's definitely a connection with the Christ, what I call the Christ energy, the energy that Jesus held that caused people to feel like they were connected and part of each other. And there's also a connection with Jesus and Ra from my study of this. And the first time that came up was in the reincarnation of Edgar Casey, where what said they were the Ra group, said through David Wilcock, we came to you in Christianity, but we don't speak in those terms much anymore because of the way religion screwed it up. And then later I asked BK the direct question, when Jesus said, Father, who answered? And they said, the Ra group. Now, Terry doesn't necessarily have to believe this. You don't even have to believe it. I'm just telling you what I came up with. And if you read the reincarnation of Edgar Casey, and if you read the channeling sessions in that, to me, there was definitely a connection with Jesus. In fact, when I was writing the book, I was going to include that as a special chapter, or at least a few paragraphs. And David, you know, just said, we can't do that. Don't dare do that, because the fundamentalists will be chasing us around the block. And so we didn't include it. The only thing that leaked through was that one statement, that we came to you in Christianity, but we don't speak in those terms anymore. So, nobody has to believe anything. You don't have to believe Jesus was talking to Ra. You could call it the Father. You could call it God. You could call it the one infinite creator. You know, it the name doesn't matter, because it's the energy of the connection that matters. And on these calls, it's the energy of the connection that we all do with each other. So with that little introduction, Terry, would you like to say something?
Well, first of all, I'd like to say that the area that I call him Yeshua, he called me Matai, which is the name that they used back in the day for Aramaic. They spoke Aramaic. Yeshua told me that the ethene community predicted his coming for a number of years. So that community prepared for it. And so when he did come, they were prepared for his coming. It was no surprise that he'd be coming. And the Essene community referred him as a teacher of righteousness. We are now having the coming of the teacher of righteousness, referring to Yeshua. So when he came, the group of people were highly aware of and tied to the Essene community, even though they lived in Nazareth, was expecting that. There were certain women chosen, who I'd say the most sacred, wonderful women of the community, were chosen to give birth to Yeshua and bring in the teacher of righteousness. And so when it came to down to Mother Mary being the one who ended up being chosen, even though there were maybe six other young girls who were also ready to be in that class, the class to give birth to Yeshua, she was the one, and she handled it very, very graciously and divinely, as we expect from the quality of who she was. She's a very, very special person in the kingdom of heaven as well as here on earth. And even though Joseph, who ultimately married her, was also a well-respected gentleman of the community, he had some reluctance in taking Mary for his wife, because she explained to him, "I'm already pregnant, although I've never been with man, but I'm already pregnant by divine will." And Gabriel was apparently instrumental. The Archangel Gabriel was apparently the one who assisted with God's plan and impregnated her as a birth that was entirely planned by the host of the religions. But
hey, Jerry, let me ask you: did Jesus say that? Did you say Ezekiel? Or did you say?
Yes.
Ezekiel.
Yeah.
Now you know. If you read Michael Tellinger's stuff, which I have been reading lately, and this does not take away really anything from Jesus, at least for me, you know, because I think he did what he did. I think it was the Ra group that was working very closely with him, and the Elohim in a more distant way. But there was this idea that in the birth of Jesus, that it was actually an advanced ET test tube baby, and that many of the beings that were called angels were actually ETs. So, in a sense, she had a virgin birth because it was a test tube thing. And you know, there was actually another time historically, and this was in the Edgar Cayce readings, in the story of Ra-Ta. You know who Ra-Ta is, don't you, Terry?
Yeah.
Ra-Ta was the early life of Edgar Cayce, approximately 10,000 BC. The indications are that the Ra group was working with Ra-Ta, And Murata was doing miracles. There were beings. The Ra group was creating bodies that people could see at the time. And they said it was a mistake after they did it, because the priesthood of Egypt picked them up and used their name, Amun-Ra, as a way to control all the people. And it seemed that work of Ra-Ta. But in the Edgar Cayce readings, to the best of my memory, Ra-Ta, it was said in the Edgar Cayce readings, was a product of an E.T. and a human mother, and another hybrid birth, and that the E.T.'s, let's say the positive E.T.'s, were using, I don't know how much they knew, I don't know if they knew about the Ra group, I don't know what, you know, anything like that. But it seems like to get somebody to be really, really connected to the higher levels, there needed to be a very high level of DNA activation, and that they were using these hybrid births to create a being of sufficient activation to do what both, you know, what Ra-Ta did. And so I'm speculating here. I'm just, you know, this is hypothetical because there's no evidence that this is true. Only Michael Tellinger thought it was true. He put it together and said it was true. But do you think that's possible?
No, I don't. And several reasons for this. Number one, the Essene community, which I do not believe was that attached to the Anunnaki or any extraterrestrial. They were an independent group as far as they could see. They had predicted and backed the birth of Yeshua for several years. And that's number one. Number two, the message of Yeshua was totally in conflict and opposition to what the Anunnaki had said. So not only did they not come from, you know, that E.T., that concept, but his message was completely opposing that of the Anunnaki.
Well, keep in mind there were two branches of the Anunnaki. There was the Enlil side, and Enki.
I know.
Enki was not.
You and I went to Michael Tellinger's lecture.
Right. Right.
Right. And I liked the man. I think a lot that he says is correct, and I like the way he's doing.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't believe the whole thing is a story. It's necessarily that correct. But a lot of ways it is correct. That doesn't make it all wrong. Or all right.
You can, partially right.
That's my feeling.
You can explore this stuff, and you don't have to say this is true or that's not true. It's like just looking at it from all the angles. This is what I do. I look at something from all the angles for quite some time and see if the truth of something comes to the surface, you know? So that's just one of those things that I have hanging out there, particularly when I know the Ra group worked with Ra-Ta. I know that. That's as much as I could know it. It was both Edgar Cayce and the Ruckert material. And I know that Ra-Ta was a hybrid birth. And I know the Essenes are connected to Jesus in a big way. And I don't have all the pieces of the puzzle. This is one of those puzzle pieces I've been thinking about for a long time, trying to figure out the integration of the Ra group, the Anunnaki, the Old Testament, and there's a flow there, which I'm getting little pieces of. But you know what? Let's not focus on that particular aspect of this anymore, because the fact of the matter is, Jesus did exist. He did do something really amazing through his life. And at this point, I believe that you were closely associated with Jesus. And why don't you share, you heard Jesus contacted you. You never had any direct contact with Jesus until 1995. Isn't that correct?
I will say this. I had dreams about him a lot. He was very close to me in my dreams. And of course, I was a Presbyterian growing up, so I learned about his life from my teachers at that time. But he felt very close. I had a very, very, very close relationship with him, although he never spoke to me, but only in dreams.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's good enough to say, yes, I had exposed him long before 1995.
Okay, you felt the energy of Jesus, and you had dreams of Jesus, right?
Very, very close, intimate dreams of Jesus.
Do you remember any of the dreams now?
Well, I do, but I choose not to share them.
Okay. But then in 1995, it became way more conscious, correct?
Yes, that's when he said to me, you were Matai, and you were with me at that time, and you were the tax collector. And I mm-hmm. wish you to write a book, not necessarily about the group there, the whole group, which it did actually entail. I want you to write a book about my life and tell the many factors that there was not room to put in the Bible, but the many factors mm-hmm. of my life that have never been brought to light of day. Please write that. I want more of my life to be known to everyone. So I did that. That was my goal, to write a book about Yeshua's life. And that's mm-hmm. what I did.
In the book of Matthew, I don't know if you can answer this, but in the book of Matthew, did that book represent what Matthew really wrote, or was it edited and kind of cut up afterwards?
That's a very, very interesting question. I was an educated individual at that time, and I wrote the language well and could speak well. Well educated. I kept notes of the whole journey of Yeshua as I personally saw them that day. However, the book of Matthew was not written by me per se, but taken from my books, from my notes, from my diary, and was very accurate. Extremely accurate, because it was one of my distant, we might say, I had disciples too. One of my disciples that chose to take my diary, take my notes, take my thoughts, and what I had written, and put it down into a official book, the Book of Matthew, the Book of Matthew,
mm-hmm.
and that's what
mm-hmm.
it was.
So you never compiled it all. You just had a bunch of notes, and somebody was your disciple or working with you compiled it and put it together, right?
That's pretty much the way it occurred. That's a kind of an oversimplification of it. But it was taken directly from my writing in the diary, in my notes, because I was kind of the leader of the disciples somewhat, because I knew about finances. I was the most educated of all. I was very connected to Rome, even though my my life was there in Nazareth. I was very connected to Rome.
When you left being a tax collector, when you quit, were the Romans mad at you? I mean, did you have anybody that said, wait a second, your contract isn't up here, or anything like that? Do you remember that?
No, we didn't officially have a contract, first of all. But what mm-hmm. I did do is listen to Yeshua and do. He asked that all the money I had could give, I would give back to the people of Nazareth at that time. I would give the money back, all that I had. Instead of giving it to Rome, I would give it back to the people who gave it to mm-hmm. me originally as a tax collector.
Now, was that a violation of Roman laws to take the money, tax money, and then give it back to the people?
Well, it did make me a very popular person, but for some reason, they never decided to do anything about it. I think
you didn't get in, you didn't get in trouble.
The situation, they had so much taxes coming in from all over the understood world that probably that bit of taxes was really insignificant anyway in the mm-hmm. big scheme of things.
And
so they really didn't care much about it.
So why don't you describe exactly where you were and what happened when you met Jesus in that time?
Yeah, well, here we are. My first meeting, is that what you're referring to?
Your first meeting. Yeah.
Well, a bunch of jolly, celebrating people came down the road into our town, and I couldn't help but noticing them. My goodness, they were boisterous and happy, joyful group, and normally pretty much dull day. You know, my life wasn't too excited, too joyful, because of my profession as a tax collector. I wasn't exactly accepted or introduced in a very fine way. So, life is kind of dull, you might say. Not too much fun.
It's like when people would see you, they'd say, here is the guy that wants our money, right?
Yeah, right.
So,
here's the guy not doing with his own religion, not staying with his people, but he's collecting taxes for Rome.
Mm-hmm.
These are the people who are... People who are under their control. And he's always so, with them. Well, the truth
Matthew
is, I was very, even though I had one foot in Israel, I had one foot in Rome as well. So
Matthew was Jewish.
Pardon me?
Was Matthew Jewish? Jewish?
Oh, yeah.
He was. Okay.
Yeah. Well, I had one foot in Rome, so they accepted me pretty well as one of them mm-hmm. as well. So I had a foot in each, world, because I was an educated individual and worked very hard. I loved the Romans. They accepted me fully. I got invited to their parties and everything else. I was almost considered, not quite, but almost considered one of them. I still was Jewish, so I still had another foot in my own religion, my own group.
Now, in general, did the Romans accept the Jews at that time, or did they keep them as a lower caste?
The Romans were very open. In fact, one of the wonderful things about the Romans, if I could say this, is that they accepted the people who they occupied. They pretty well accepted their religion. They accepted their ways. They integrated that into their lifestyle. So they learned from the people that they dominated and controlled. They learned from them. So that made them very, very... The Romans were very exceptional people.
And but they weren't too happy with Jesus after Jesus took control of the Jews, right? Or became...
No, actually, the one who was unhappy with Jesus was Caiaphas, the leader of the Jewish religion. It wasn't the Romans. They were not happy with Jesus. They were just trying to work with the leader of Jerusalem, the leader of Israel. That was Caiaphas, or Caiaphas, as it's called. He was the leader of the church. He was a very important man. And since they didn't have anybody greater than him, he was the guy. So the Pilate, Pontius Pilate, was simply trying to appease him and keeping him happy. He didn't really have anything to negative to do about Yeshua. He loved it. As far as he knew, if Pontius Pilate had not been a ruler, he would have probably been one of Yeshua's best friends. I mean, he was a very fair man. Pontius Pilate, who gets pretty well beat up in general, he was a pretty nice, decent guy, really.
Mm-hmm.
He only was doing what he's doing for because of Caiaphas. Caiaphas.
Mm-hmm.
Trying
so he thought he was
a GP.
Yeah.
In general.
Now, when you went on the road with Jesus, where was your family? Did you have parents at the time?
Most of my parents either were gone, had died, or were not very much influencing me in any way, because I had made a profession that most of the people of Israel wouldn't agree with anyway. So they were not part of my friends and family, friends I should say, mainly because they had pretty well, I think by that time there's a little hiatus in my life, but they had pretty well passed on by that time.
So your family, you were not really connected to your family. They were not saying...
Not particularly.
They weren't telling you ruined your life and ran off with this guy.
Well, I ruined my life, first of all, when I was a Roman and did their bidding. But I enjoyed the parties and I enjoyed the lifestyle. I could communicate with the Romans so much better than the average Israelite. So then when I went with Yeshua, that really turned, you know, was family off. So, you know, well, I was a definite unique individual. Absolutely.
So now you're on the road with Jesus. You're on the road with him. You remember the first place you went?
Yeah, I can't. It's in my book. I think in my writing, the town.
Yeah.
I can't remember the name of it at this point, but I end up, as I said in the book, bringing too much of my personal stuff. Although it wasn't even practical to have all that stuff, but you know, it's hard to go from a life of luxury and all the material things to be toned down to live a life of having a lot less and being more humble and more, I'd say, without the natural support of luxuries of life or luxuries of things that you seem you couldn't live without, you know. Really, we travel light, and there wasn't room for all the stuff that I brought along in that first town I met with.
Did you have to carry the stuff on your back, or did you have donkeys?
We carried on our backs. Yes, we normally did not have donkeys.
Now, you know, I have this idea that there's like this emotional energy that connects people. But the next octave up from that is kind of a light vibration. It just lifts there. It goes beyond the emotions. And I always had the idea that Jesus must have had that kind of vibration when he was working with people. Do you recall that feeling?
Oh, absolutely. That's part of what attracted me to him. It's like a magnet for me. His light, his energy, his graciousness is very self projected out for a distance of probably, I estimate, a mile from him. Now, keep in mind, there are two types of energy that we talk about. One is light. The light, and that he was full of light. And that's very important because that's a very powerful thing that he contained, the light of the Christ. He was his. He had that. It's also the light of the love from the Father. It's also a very, very positive energy. They're two separate energies, but they're both ideally wonderful, both the light and the love from the Father. This is both wonderful energy. Which is most powerful? I don't know. They're both very powerful. I'm right now thinking that really when I feel the light that's within me, still is within me, I also think of the love from my Father, Heavenly Father, which also within me. I think they're both extremely powerful. And in my opinion, this is what I seek to have fulfilled within me.
You know, Terry, we've almost done the whole show. We were going to do... Are you okay? Should we go on for another 5 or 10 minutes?
Okay, yes. Yes, we're just talking about this. I love this, you know. There's no stopping me. I don't get tired when I talk about it. The energy is coming through me.
That's what I thought would happen.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. You're right.
Very case.
By the way, I do want to say something that may be pertinent to a conversation. Yeshua told me that he was not the only virgin birth in the history of mankind. Of course, we know that mankind has been on this earth for long before, a million years ago, in some form or other, probably a more primitive form, but still has been there. And he says, over the history of mankind on this earth, there's been approximately 100 people who were virgin-born and held the light, the Christed light. So, there you go. That may be a surprise to a lot of people. Just like you said, there were 7, hear me good, 7 Adams and Eve, 7 of them. And that makes sense when you read the Bible and find out that how could they have read with others if they were the original Adam and Eve. There were 7 Adams and Eve. That's why.
Mm-hmm.
That's how. So, the history is exactly accurate.
When did Buddha come in? Buddha was after Jesus, correct?
Yeah, Buddha came about 1,000 years. He came after Jesus. But for that area of the Orient, or India, and China, and that, he was perfect. His energy was more compliant with that than with Jesuit. So, yes. He was perfect for that time. Actually, as I recall, I don't want to speak it directly. I'm very much on the truth. I only speak truth. Buddha was born prior to Yeshua, about 1,000 years. So, but for that time, his energy, what he brought to the earth, his band of religion or thought, was ideal for that particular time in history. To understand, mm-hmm. his message was important, very important.
Yes.
But only for that time in history.
Now, okay. was Yeshua aware of the teachings of Buddha?
He told me he was. We spoke of Buddha.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. He told me he was.
You know, there's also people that say that Jesus, before he started his ministry, he spent time in India. Did he ever talk about that?
Well, yes, in the book I say that Uncle Joe, Joseph Arimathea, was a merchant. He was
right,
a very wealthy, very wealthy merchant,
mm-hmm.
and he had a number of ships. And he took, during the time after Yeshua's initial education, from year 12 on, he took Yeshua on board his ship to show him the rest of the world. This is important.
Mm-hmm.
They took him to India to show him India, what it was like to
mm-hmm.
people like,
mm-hmm.
what their
yep.
priests were like. This is part of Yeshua's upbringing, of Yeshua's education.
So
by
he probably
Jesus was not poor. He had his uncle Joseph, a very wealthy man, that made sure that every need was met. However, he chose to live a very humble life. Yeshua did.
Mm-hmm.
Very humble
mm-hmm.
life. Born in a barn, you know. He
mm-hmm.
he chose to be part of a very humble, simple life. And we live like a very jolly band of guys going around with our group around from city to city, as far as we could reach
mm-hmm.
at that time. By the way, we had a lot of people that joined us. A lot of people came and joined us. But sometimes we were pretty much alone, just the 12 of us. But other times we had many people accompanying us, wanted to be around our energies, mainly Yeshua's energies. Wanted to be around it. So at times we had a number of people in our little band of jolly people. Not just the 12 of us, but many people.
Mm-hmm. How many? Like 30, 40, 100?
Oh, no, not that many. Probably a dozen or two dozen.
Mm-hmm.
It's very,
that,
there was
you
no...
know,
there was no strict rules. It varied from time to time. You know, who could get mm-hmm. away, who could come with us. Times, nobody. We just, was us, 12 with Yeshua. But other times, there were groups that came with us. They cooked for us. The women were very kind. They cooked for us. They saw we got a warm meal, which
mm-hmm.
was good because we stayed in people's houses, usually, when it went to the city. But sometimes, we'd end the day, it'd be night, and we'd be out in the countryside. We didn't always have a city near us. We bedded down at night.
Mm-hmm. You know, one very interesting thing that's come up in what I've learned from your work is that there were two disciples that actually ended up going against what Jesus would have really wanted to happen. And one of them was Peter, and the other one was Judas. Of course, historically, Judas sold Jesus out for 30 pieces of silver. But in talking to you, Judas was actually wanting Jesus to become a public, how would I say it, wanted him to be recognized by the masses by doing some kind of miracle when he would be crucified, and that he wouldn't actually die, and then the masses would see that miracle and be endeared to him. Do I have that right?
Yeah, Terry, well, that... Judas was the only one of our disciples that was not from around the Sea of Galilee. Judas mm-hmm. actually came from Jerusalem, the city of Jerusalem. And mm-hmm. what he wanted to do is indeed get Jesus arrested and have Jesus simply walk out through the rails, the bars, kept him in jail, and run a group that would overcome the Romans and kick them out of the country so that they would be free. But that wasn't Yeshua's plan at all. And actually, this happened a lot with me, but Judas did something to Jesus thinking that that was the way it should go. But yet, Judas did exactly what Yeshua wanted. Exactly. He was one of Jesus' best disciples, in my opinion. And he was a friend of mine. And I do know him as well. In this lifetime, I did know him. In this lifetime. But what he did for one reason was exactly what needed to be done from Yeshua's reason.
Yeshua wanted to be crucified then, right?
Well, yeah. Mm-hmm. Exactly. That was the plan. That was the divine plan to show that you could be crucified and yet be resurrected and then ascend and be back again. That mm-hmm. the soul was eternal. That the physical body was only a temporary suit we wore, a suit of clothes. Mm-hmm. It was temporary. That the soul is eternal. That's what he's trying to demonstrate to people, of course.
Mm-hmm.
So Judas fell right in perfectly in the plan of Yeshua. It was, as you say, it was Peter that did not follow the plan, because Yeshua said to us, first of all, we don't want to make a religion. Well, what did he do? Peter went and made a religion. And we want you to go two by two through the countryside, through the world as we know it. And I went all the way down to what is now Africa and way down to some of the countries of Africa, and
went around to
a number of places around the Mediterranean as well. So I went to a number of places to spread the word of Jesus, not as a religion, but as a philosophy of carrying on with his duty as being teacher, teacher that he was.
Which disciple was your partner?
Well, Philip was for a while. Philip. But I realized, Jesus probably expected, Peter to go to Rome. Because Peter thought, well, hey, it's a good thing that I'm going to Rome because they already have in operation a system where I could promote Christianity, which he did. But Yeshua said, don't start a religion. But look, I thought Yeshua said go two by two, and we all did. But wait a minute, there's now only 11 of us. How could we go two by two? Yeshua knew already exactly what was going to happen. That there'd be one extra, one single. And he knew that Peter would do what he did. He knew in advance what was going on, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
So there's only there's 11 of us. We couldn't go 2 by 2. There had to be one odd guy out, and that was Peter.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
All right. Well, guess what, Terry? We did the entire hour. Except, I got to tell people, if you want to read Terry's book, The Man Who Walked with Jesus, packed full of his memories of being there, the website is manwhowalked.com. No spaces. Manwhowalked.com. You can take a look. You'll see what Terry looks like. He's really good looking, except he still has a Roman nose. Would you say that, Terry?
Maybe so. Maybe so.
I think you and I both have Roman noses.
Yeah.
Okay.
Right.
In any case, I am. This was not scheduled, and I am so glad that we did it. And Terry, I want to say your energy really held through this. In fact, it got better. So we got to do more of these. Okay. I keep
There's
telling
no
you.
Problem.
I'm going to open up the microphone.
All callers are unmuted.
And the microphones are open. And
Dr. Friedman, thank you so much.
Lynn, can you put me back on the list? I don't know what we did for a week, but I'm not on your email list.
Oh, well, Morgan, you got excommunicated.
Yeah, me too.
So it seems.
So did I, Morgan.
I didn't take you off the list, Morgan. We'll have to check it out and see. I heard Chris in the background. I heard.
Hey.
Did you hear that? That was Chris.
Yeah, I'm take one.